Welcome to episode 29 of Speak Beastie for January the 29th, 2017.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Sophie.
And I'm Elena. How are you guys doing today?
I'm sleepy.
Sleepy. This is the one time in which the American hosts are up early in the morning, and it is sometime in the lovely afternoon for the UK people.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's great. I'm actually awake.
This is great. You'll get a whole new Sophie today, everyone.
Yeah. Be completely different. I might be falling asleep on my keyboard.
And now a message from our sponsor.
Stop the presses! Speak Beastie is on Patreon.com. With options ranging from $1 to $5 per month, you can become a sponsor of Speak Beastie and help us to bring you more from Newt's fantastic wizarding world. Rewards include access to bloopers and extended conversations. You can also help us decide on a discussion topic for future episodes. Check out Patreon.com/Speak Beastie to learn more and become a sponsor today.
So now for the Phoenix Register. So there's not a terrible amount of news today, but we do have this morning, as we're recording, they announced the Oscar nominations for 2017, and Fantastic Beasts is nominated for two of them, which is exciting. So the two that it is nominated for are obviously costume design for Colleen Atwood, which we have talked at length about. I'm pretty sure we have at least two episodes that have the word coat in them. In their titles.
Definitely.
We're just obsessed with coats on this show. So
she should
Colleen
win it on the-
Atwood.
She should win it on that alone, just the coats.
Yeah. Just give her all the Oscar for best coats of life ever. To Colleen Atwood for the rest of time. But yeah, so Colleen Atwood, for those beautiful, beautiful costumes, is nominated, as well as Stuart Craig and Anna Pinnock are nominated for Best Production Design, which is also extraordinarily well-deserved. And the films that, let's see, for costume design, the other nominees that Colleen Atwood will be up against are something
she like? Up against herself anywhere?
She's, that has happened on multiple occasions, I believe. She is up against the designers for Allied, Florence Foster Jenkins, Jackie, and La La Land, which La La Land is nominated for flipping everything.
And I haven't seen any of those movies.
I've seen Fantastic Beasts 5 times, so it's almost like I've seen 5 movies in that category. but yeah, I've seen the costumes for Jackie are apparently really amazing and historically on point, so that's cool.
I think the costumes for all of them are good. I think Fantastic Beasts has a chance, but it'll be close.
Yeah. I mean, costume design is always a difficult category because usually all the ones that are nominated are literally so perfect. But yeah, Colleen
and
Atwood.
Historical stuff is nominated a lot.
Yeah. And Colleen Atwood has won like a really inordinate amount of Oscars. Colleen Atwood Oscars. Let's see.
I don't think she'll be too broken up if she loses.
Yeah. Yes. Oh my god, the list of nominees for her is just it. I have to like side scroll. Okay, she's been nominated 12 times by this thing I'm looking at, and she's won 3 times. She's won for Chicago, Memoirs of a Geisha, and Alice in Wonderland. So
okay,
oh, I forgot Alice in Wonderland one.
Oh, I did not know. She designed the costumes for the Lemony Snicket's Series of Unfortunate Events movie in 2005, which is not as cool as the Netflix show, which I binge-watched last week.
I'm like halfway through.
It's good.
I haven't watched it
yet. Good stuff. Speak Beastie totally endorses Series of Unfortunate Events, or at least Elena does. I don't know if I can speak for the whole podcast, but totally check it out.
It's really good.
Yeah, and then the other films that are nominated for Best Production Design were, let's see, Arrival, which got a lot of nominees. Hail Caesar, which, as Shannon told me, is really cool, but I have not seen.
It is.
La La Land again, and Passengers, which looked really cool from the trailers, but I've sadly heard is not that great.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I think Hail Caesar could win production design, but maybe I'm just biased because I love it. But
we usually think the things we love deserve it, even if they don't.
Yeah.
But yeah, the nominees this year look good. They're at least they're slightly more diverse this year, which is a good sign. But
yeah, I was just looking and there's like three black women for actress in a supporting role.
Yeah. Although Taraji P. Henson was not nominated for Hidden Figures, which
yeah,
I won't get into that because I have nothing nice to say about it.
Yeah, Meryl Streep was nominated again.
For the 800,000th time.
She's great, but
I do love Meryl Streep. I mean, like, Meryl Streep could totally play Grindelwald and we'd be in good hands, but at the same time, like, she's just been nominated so many times, I almost feel that they're like, oh, Meryl did a thing, let's nominate her. You know?
Yeah.
Not that she's not great. She's spectacular and I love her, but I just think, you know, when you've got, you know, 2,000 nominations and then there's other people who have either not been nominated at all before or may have been nominated before but had a really strong performance and they keep getting, like, left out of the category because Meryl Streep gets, like, the default spot, and that's just kind of bummer. That's my thoughts on the Oscars.
But here's the important thing. Moana is nominated for original song, and it needs to win and beat La La Land's two nominations in original song, because if it wins, then Lin-Manuel Miranda will be the youngest PGOT winner ever, and he'll have won this it in the shortest true. Amount of time.
Yeah,
that would be awesome. Very important.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't know what that is, that means he will have won a Pulitzer, an Emmy, a Grammy, an Oscar, and a Tony, in the shortest amount of time ever. And I actually just learned who the first person to ever win that was, and it's actually Rita Moreno, who is like an amazing goddess that we don't deserve as a species. But she is actually in a new Netflix show called One Day at a Time, which also. Watch that show, y'all. It's amazing. This is apparently our Phoenix Register today is a list of recommendations for shows and movies to watch. So
yeah.
Speak Beastie recommends.
Yes.
Should be a new segment.
Whole new segment, yes.
Fill in the feature. Gap between the films.
Yeah, for our Patreon listeners.
Get
our subscription list. So the other news that we do have is just a smaller piece of news, but Zoe Kravitz got interviewed recently about Newt's relationship, and she did not say very much, which is not surprising, because she probably can't, because, you know, Warner Brothers knows where she lives. She specifically said when she was asked about her relationship with Newt, she was quoted saying, "I know nothing. I have an idea based off of when I auditioned, but I know nothing. Even when I was going to do my chemistry read with Eddie, he was trying to help me piece together what was happening in the scene that we were reading. He doesn't get to see anything either, so he was like, I think I based this line, and we'll see what was shot here and what's going on. We had to guess. It was funny to watch him trying to piece it all together, but I think that there's a few films ahead, so the relationship between Lita and Newt Scamander is complex, so I think there'll be a lot of time for that to grow and develop, which will be fun." So that was one of those, like, giant paragraphs that tells you nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, tells you a little something, that it'll be complex, which we probably had already guessed.
It's hard to, like, guess what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, we've done some speculation about the two of them. I actually am really kind of clinging to the hope that she was a Hufflepuff, even though everyone is like, oh no, that can't possibly be true.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, why not? Why could Lita have not been a Hufflepuff? And maybe everything we know about what happened between them was a misunderstanding.
And it'll be interesting to see, like, why she shows back up in his life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you know they didn't just mention her to kind of, like, have her be a Mark Evans who never gets brought up again and is pointless.
Yeah.
Like, she's important. And she's going to play a much... I believe they even said this before we knew who she was playing. They said she will have a very small cameo, literally a photo
I know.
In the movie, and then she will go on to play a bigger role in movie two, which is going to be cool.
It's kind of nice that they actually cast someone during the first movie, knowing that she would just be a picture. Because usually in cases like that, they like just have someone random, you know, a model, and then cast someone later and act like it's the same person.
Yeah, I really appreciated that too.
Yeah, they thought ahead.
I guess, yeah, because I guess they probably knew that she'd become more important, so they thought it'd be worth it, maybe. Whereas in like the Harry Potter films, they didn't know what was coming, so they'd just be like, oh, I'll get this random person, and then change it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, yeah.
Or give a person more lines and make them be played by a totally different person of a different race, you know.
Yeah.
So at least we've progressed in some areas, if not if not all. So now for today's outpost. We wanted to start off today's outpost. We actually got a really lovely message this morning from a listener named Jade, who actually also like subscribed to us on Patreon. So thanks, Jade. We just wanted to give you a shout out because that message, like, we got it just before we started recording and it kind of made everyone's day. So yeah, shout outs to you and all our other Patreon people.
Woo!
Yay! Patreon people are awesome. But speaking of our Patreon people, one of our listeners named Marjolaine submitted us a question on speakbeastie.com. Now, she actually had a two-part question, but the second part of her question we're actually going to leave for the main discussion. We're going to be chatting about Serafina Pickery. But for now, we're just going to get to her one question that she asked about Newt. About Newt's magical knowledge, he's around 30 in 1926, and if he was expelled at 16, he really had time to complete his learning after leaving Hogwarts. Traveling is a very good way to complete any formation. I'd like to see if he learned any other kind of magic in other countries. About care of magical creatures, I don't think that existed during Newt's years. His book is really the first of its kind, and it changed the way wizards consider magical creatures. Newt's work is probably the reason that the lesson is created at Hogwarts.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about care of magical creatures not existing before, but it makes sense because he says that he's writing the book to change the way people think, so...
He literally wrote the book on it, you could say.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's really cool that, like, getting to kind of see, like, you know, knowing care of magical creatures and, like, how that affects, like, Harry at Hogwarts is kind of cool seeing, like, the origins of how that book actually came to be a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that it's really cool, this idea that, like, you know, we're really getting to see, like, I love the idea of them saying, like, Newt learning other kinds of magic in other countries. Like, I'm really curious how that's going to carry over to the whole being in Paris thing.
Yeah.
Like, I'm really looking forward to French magic. Because they have, like, really fun alternate phrases for some of the Harry Potter stuff in France. Like, Voldemort's middle name, or Tom Riddle's middle name, is Elvis, which is great. And I think the way that you say Hufflepuff is Poufsouf, which is just adorable.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the setup is there if he comes into contact with any kind of ministry type. Sort of government level stuff and how they kind of run it.
Yeah, it's like, do they function more like the Magical Congress, or do they have something more similar? I feel like, given the fact that France itself does kind of seem to go more with like what England does in their like normal Muggle politics. Oh gosh, are we gonna get a third word for Muggles? We're gonna get another one.
Ooh.
We're gonna have Muggles, no badges, and whatever's. Oh my. I don't know.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
What Muggle was in French.
I feel like, yeah, that's actually coming back to me now. We're going to find out. Muggle in French. Hmm. Oh. It looks on according to Google Translate, which I don't know if Google Translate speaks magic, apparently it would be Muldu, which I'm probably saying totally wrong.
Muldu.
Because I am not French.
That's quite a cool word, though.
Yeah.
Although... it sounds a bit like moldy, but yeah.
Yeah.
Moldy Muggles.
Moldy Muggles.
Might
I love
be appropriate.
It. Yeah, I still think like nomad just kind of like become part of my vocabulary now, but I still like it's just so American. Like it's just not exciting or fun sounding. It's just like nomad. And it's like, I get it that Americans would use a term that's like that simplistic in language, but it's also annoying.
Yeah.
Because a muggle sounds so much more magical.
So for the main discussion this week, we're going to talk about Serafina Pickery.
Yay! Woo!
Pickery party!
So some facts from Pottermore. She attended Ilvermorny, as we know, and was one of the few people to all four houses chose her. She's one of the few people that that has happened to. And that means that she's awesome. And she ended up choosing Horned Serpent, which, what is Horned Serpent again?
That's
the mind?
Horned Serpent is the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Pukwudgie's heart, Wampus is like body, I think, or something.
Yeah.
And then Thunderbird is spirit, which I like.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Mind favors scholars.
Yeah.
And so that is what she chose. So I guess that really says more about her than it does about the house, since she got to choose out of all four houses.
And I think Pottermore also says that she was actually the only person in her generation at not Hogwarts, at Ilvermorny. she was the first person to have that happen in her generation, not like ever.
Yeah.
It hadn't happened for a long time.
Yeah. Which is pretty sick.
So let's see. She is left-handed, and that's because Carmen Yogo is left-handed. Right?
I think so.
And so she was like, she's left-handed. And she's got like the coolest wand ever.
Basically.
It is made of swamp mayha wood by Violetta Bouvet.
Yeah. I think that's Bouvet.
I'm like, Bouvet. I know we've gone through this conversation before. And it has a Rougarou hair. We knew all about her wand like months ago.
Yeah, it's
long
really,
before the movie came out.
Yeah, and they released like it's really like intricate detail, isn't it? The design.
Yeah, mm-hmm. She has like a purple gemstone or something on hers. It's really beautiful. I've not
it's
seen
one
in person,
one.
But the photos.
We never see it in the film, but
of course not. Right, and she said that very powerful magic comes out of this wand.
She never uses it.
Yeah. Just got to take her word for it, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really like, and I mean, we'll get to it a little bit more later, but yeah, you know, I'll just save that for when we get to it. But I have some thoughts on Serafina that I want to share.
And then we see her in Fantastic Beasts as she is serving as the MACUSA president. She served from 1920 to 1928. So it seems like MACUSA presidents have the same terms as U.S. presidents. I don't know if that was confirmed, but she served for 8 years. Most U.S. presidents serve for 2 terms to be 8 years. And so she was kind of at the latter end of her presidency in 1926 when the movie takes place.
Or maybe she has 4 2-year terms. You never know.
Maybe.
Ooh.
We would love it if you would clarify for us, Joe, since we know you listen.
So, and she's not the first woman president of MACUSA, as we know about like Emily Rappaport of Rappaport's Law. I think that might be the only other woman president we know about.
It's kind of nice to know the wizarding world has that together.
Yeah. Well, and then I was wondering like if she could be the first black president. But I don't know. So I guess we probably would never really learn what the other presidents look like because they're not important. Only so.
Until she writes a spinoff about them.
Yeah. About all the presidents.
it'll be like the Disney Hall of Presidents, but
aww,
magical presidents.
That would be cute.
Wouldn't it be great if you went into that and they like just had an installation? It was just like all the normal presidents that you know of in U.S. history. And then just, whoop, Serafina Pickery's there. Sup?
I'd love that.
That would be nice. You listening, Universal?
Get on it. Yeah. Except probably don't call it the Hall of Presidents. Disney might be mad.
Yeah, call it the the corridor of leaders.
Wow. Great.
We'll go with it. It works.
Subtle.
Totally.
So we have the other half of Marjolaine's comment, which is about Seraphina. So I'm going to read that. She says, I'm quite disappointed by her very minor role in the movie. Joe and Pottermore gave us so many details about her. She was the only one we knew the Ilvermorny house of, her wand's origin, and even that she's left-handed. She was presented as such a badass character. If we don't see her more in the next movies, I really don't understand why Joe gave so many details about her. But how can she be in future movies since we're leaving the USA? Or maybe it's a lost plot line. Or maybe Joe is planning a spinoff about her?
I'd be here for that, honestly. I would sign up for that.
Yeah.
I would love a spinoff about Seraphina that has no other characters we know. It's just her going on some adventure.
Yeah. Well, when she finishes being president, she could go on like a big adventure around the world.
Well, that was one of the theories that I had was, because I mean, she's going to be done. Like, we know that the film takes place in the end of 1926. And so she's only the president until 1928. If we have like a chunk of skip time between like the end of this movie mm-hmm. and the start of the next movie, it is very plausible that like she could not be president anymore by the time we get to the next film. So, but it's like at the same time, she didn't really seem like she was a huge fan of either Newt or Tina. So, like, why would she go on adventures with them?
She's just vacationing in Paris.
Yeah, she's just in the Riviera, you know, with the dragon flying overhead.
And that's because she is, like, the supposedly really powerful witch. Maybe they get her over for some reason. I don't know.
Oh, that would be cool.
Get her involved. Searching mm-hmm. for... Maybe because she arrested or had Grindelwald and then he escapes. Maybe they... She's somehow involved in, I don't know.
Maybe the new president testifying is against him, and or something. She's like, we need to, whatever.
That's a really good theory. Yeah, because I actually, so the thing I was going to say earlier that I was like, let me save it, was that I completely like echo Marjolaine's statements because mm-hmm. I really was so excited about her character. And it's not that she was a bad character, but she just, they didn't give her anything to do. Like you have this actress who's got a really incredible presence, and we know all these fun facts about her backstory. So, like, I was just so ready for her character, and then she's in
the trailers so much.
Like, yeah, she's in very few scenes of the movie. And what bothered me, I think, the most, and this is a writing thing, so, you know, looking at you for this one, Joe, like, there's two different points where she says, like, almost the exact same thing. It's like the, this'll mean war, it means war. And I'm just like, okay, we get it. Like, she doesn't have to say that at two different points, but it just felt like even within the few moments that we got her, like, her dialogue wasn't even that diversified. It was kind of like she was echoing the exact same sentiments in every scene that we saw her in. And that just felt unfair to the actress because I'm like, she's really good. Like, the way that she talks is so, like, amazing and just powerful, and you're like, oh, I love this, but she just doesn't get a chance to say as much as she could.
Yeah, you felt like, with all this info they gave us, they really built her up to be this sort of really important part of the story, and then, like you say, she was barely in it, mm-hmm. and, it was disappointing. So she was just sort of there to, I guess, represent the views of Mercuza, I guess.
And I'm still eternally bothered by, like, the fact that with her characterization, they had it where she completely dismisses Tina and is like, I don't care about what you have to say. And then the next scene that we see her in, she's being like, why didn't you tell me what you had to say? Well, I don't know. Maybe because you told her to go away and that you weren't going to listen to her. Like,
infuriating.
Yeah, it seems really inconsistent to just have her be, like, so dismissive of Tina. But then as soon as she finds out, like, oh, well, this is what happened, she's, like, got this rage of, like, how could you not let me know this? And I'm just like, you know, gold star, she tried. Like,
yeah.
But... didn't really give her a chance.
Yeah, it did feel like, going back to the points in that question. It did kind of feel a bit like a bit of a lost plot, like something had got cut or she was meant to be more. And I guess there was...
We've learned a lot about the different, like, cutscenes that are going to be in it, but yeah. I don't think they've mentioned any cutscenes that feature her.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
Which is kind of frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would guess that if there was stuff cut, it was cut from the script before they filmed.
Yeah. Maybe that there were more scenes initially, and then it got kind of cut down a bit.
Yeah, I just really have to wonder, like, because, I mean, they give us so many details about her, but then, like, you go to her page on Pottermore, and it seems, like, mostly empty, and in the actual movie itself, like I said, she just isn't given enough to say, and it's just really kind of annoying.
And that's, I worry that, like, they put so much emphasis on her because they were like, look, there's a woman of color in this movie, and she's president and stuff. And so they were, like, trying to be like, look, we are diverse.
Yeah.
Which, that's, like, that's the great saddest that she's there, but, like, that's not, yeah.
Yeah, just, it's one of those things that happens a lot where it's kind of just like, oh, look, like, we, see, there was this person in here. We were inclusive, except we weren't really, like, you know, she, the ratio of, like, you know, white guys talking in that movie to her is kind of like very representative of how a lot of media is, and that's just not something that's okay or that should be allowed to continue. And that's why it's like, you know, and I remember initially when people were tweeting at Joe after like a lot of the casting announcements, they were just like, oh, so like, you know, why are you only casting white people? And she's like, oh, but just wait, like, I know it looks like that, but I promise it's more diverse. And so it's like, you know, then you see all this, get all this information about Serafina. And so it kind of like builds up your hopes that like, okay, you're going to get this amazing character, and then it falls short. And so I'm like, so were you talking about movie two that you're finally going to get to this, or?
Well, I mean, Zoe Kravitz.
Yeah. And I'm really
going to play a major role.
I'm really hoping that like she gets, Zoe Kravitz does not get the same kind of treatment that Serafina did, because I think it's really unfair to the character and to the people who were excited about her character to just kind of have her be like, oh, look, I'm here in this really cool dress and I have a dramatic voice and the end. It's just not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hope she comes back.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, I really love that theory that she could possibly be like trying to go overseas to catch Grindelwald. Like, that's a really, I would be, you know, I'd co-sign that storyline.
Yeah.
I think that would make sense, too. If he escaped under her watch, or if he escaped over the next president's watch and she was like, you're incompetent, I'm going to take care of it. Like,
oh, yes. I would love that storyline.
Yeah, that would be good. I could see that happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'd be really interested, because they didn't, I apologize if I'm being silly and don't know this fact, but they haven't said how far of a gap there's going to be between the timelines of movie one and two yet, have they? I don't think they did.
No, I don't think so.
Just yeah, I think it's so, like Paris. There was a rumor that it picks up immediately afterwards, but then they said no.
Yeah, she shot down that, but she didn't say if it's going to be like 6 months or like 3 years or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, no, they haven't.
Yeah, because especially if you're going to get cover 20 years in these five movies,
it which seems still like seems really
got to be
really intense. Like, I don't know
how
that's going to work.
Well, I wonder if later movies, the second one or even later ones, will cover more time in the movie. Because the first one was, you know, a couple of days.
Yeah, literally, like, what, through 2 or 3 days?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But obviously the Harry Potter movies cover full school years. So we know that, like, they can do it.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe's a perfectly capable writer of covering that.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if, like, you know, because we got with, you know, Deathly Hallows, there's that whole chunk of time where it's like, oh, we're just camping in the woods looking for the Horcruxes. Yeah. Like, I gotta wonder if between, like, movies 3 and 4, there's just gonna be this, like, 5-year chunk where they're looking for Grindelwald that we just totally skip because it's just them, you know,
yeah,
hunting him down. Like, there's gonna have to be, between certain films, there's gonna have to be significant jumps.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Or, I mean, I don't know, maybe they will happen in the context of it where, you know, we'll be midway through the movie and then it'll be like, you know, 8 years later. could very well happen.
Yeah. That would be hard to do.
Yeah.
To make a big time jump in the movie, but, like, you could do it.
Yeah, you could get away with it.
It's like, I could see the next movie maybe initially picking up not long after the first movie, but it's like a montage of what Newt does for a couple of years and then ends up in Paris, you know? Like, kind of like with the newspapers, but just kind of showing Newt traveling around, and then it's like 2 years later, 3 years later, whatever, and he's in Paris.
Can you imagine, like, Paris. A sad montage of him, like, in the ministry, just feeling, like, unfulfilled with his life? Like, I'm not prepared for that. I don't like what my brain does sometimes.
But he's got to publish the book, so a montage of the book getting published.
Oh, yeah. That, now, as a writer, I would appreciate that. Like, you know, him, like, in his cute little flat in London, typing and, you know, scribbling things out and drawing doodles of Tina on the corners of pages. I'm here for that.
Yeah, and then he has to go give a copy to Tina, doesn't he? So maybe that's where it'll pick up.
Well, then he's got to do press, you know? Yeah. Him, like, awkwardly shaking people's hands and flourishing blots. Like, yes, I am a writer.
Oh, wouldn't it be funny if he was, like, in, you know, at a book signing in, like, flourishing blots, and then, like, a young Gilderoy Lockhart comes up all excited to meet him or something?
Oh, my goodness.
And he's like, I would be just like you. I don't know. Let's find out. I'm sure the internet knows.
Oh, yeah. Would he be around?
Like,
No. He was born in the 60s.
Oh well.
That's about he goes, he could go back to Hogwarts and do, like, a book talk, you know?
Yeah.
Aw. And we know that we're going to see Hogwarts, don't we?
Yeah.
Does Hogwarts have speakers at their graduation?
I don't know. We don't know anything about the graduation.
You know, that's, like, the one plot hole that just is going to eternally make me sad, that she's never shared with us what a Hogwarts graduation looks like.
That's because Harry doesn't graduate.
He just damn it, Harry.
What a loser. Dropped out of high school.
Yeah, I know, right? Go hunt Horcruxes.
Well, I do love that Joe wizard. Sends that message to people, like, oh yeah, you know,
you can drop out of, I mean,
not that we encourage dropping out of high school, but if that happens because of the course of your life, you can still go on to do great things.
Yeah.
Or you can get expelled and still, you know, write amazing books about Fantastic Beasts and shape an entire area of academia.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, isn't it? That her two main characters in this world apparently didn't finish school.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean...
Jerry's still kind of out with the whole Newt thing, but...
That would be really interesting if she did it that way, though, because, I mean, that really is such a big thing. Like, of course, education is important, and, you know, if you have the opportunities to, you should try to get one, but it's like... It's also, school is not for everybody. And I kind of like that she sends the message that, you know, there are other things in life besides, you know, writing term papers.
Yeah. What's that, Fred and George? They get out of there. And they're really successful.
Joe really
J.K. Rowling is anti-school.
Even though she has a college degree. Because she's what? She has a degree in, like, English and classics or something?
I think it's French and classics.
Yeah, French and classics.
I went to the same university as her. Oh, yeah.
What? Oh, my gosh. Like, you're like best friends.
Yep. No,
were your roommates?
I wish.
It'd be really cool if my friend
20 years apart, but...
Yeah.
My friend went to the college that J.D. Salinger went to, and she actually had, because she was going for English as well, she actually had a scholarship where she got to, like, live in his old dorm room.
Oh, that's amazing. Cool.
yeah, I was like, that's pretty cool. So, yay literature.
Oh. Yay.
Well, we've gotten way yeah. off our main discussion.
Yeah, topic, we have.
Serafina's awesome.
Well, yeah.
Any other thoughts?
I just want to see more of her. I just...
Yeah.
She's got such great potential to be this really amazing character in the series, and I just think, you know, hashtag Serafina deserves better.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's move on to the Time Turner. So today in the Time Turner, we're going to talk about women protesting.
Woo-hoo.
Because I'm sure everyone has heard about the women's marches that happened all over the world on last Saturday when this episode comes out. Were either of you guys at a march?
No, I couldn't go. I wanted to, though. I was sadly, spirit.
I was at work, and I left like immediately as soon as I was done to go downtown to the Philadelphia one. And like as soon as I got there, like it was crowds were dispersing, and I was really sad. Mm. But yeah, it was really. I was following it all day on Twitter, and just having really amazing feels and crying.
Yeah,
yeah, me too.
Good kind of crying. It was just really inspiring.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to be able to go to the one in Orlando.
Oh, which wow.
was very nice. There were a lot of like great speakers and stuff, and it was very diverse speakers, which I really appreciated. Yeah. And then we marched. We didn't march like in the streets. We marched around the big lake in Orlando downtown because they didn't have time to get a permit to march in the streets. But that's fine, because then we were like, it was really hot. It was 82 degrees.
Oh, geez.
But then when we actually marched, we were under shade.
Yeah, it was freezing in Philly. But yeah. I think Philly had, I think, an estimated turnout of like 50,000 people. It's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know how many Orlando had. I think like 10,000 or something. Hmm. But we're going to talk about a march that happened in 1913. I was trying to find one from like around the 20s and stuff. And so this is just directly from a little time blurb about this march for the
Time
suffrage
magazine,
movement.
Not Time the Concept.
Yeah, Time the Concept isn't real. It's funny, the blurb starts with timing is everything. So it was one of the largest protests of the suffrage movement, and it was the day before Woodrow Wilson was inaugurated as president in 1913. Mm-hmm. So very parallel to our present day women's marches. It was 5,000 to 8,000 suffragists, so not nearly as many as this past Saturday.
Which actually, I believe it was like marked like this was the largest protest, like simultaneous ever. Protest in like history.
Yeah, like and the largest protest against a president ever, definitely. Yeah. It was like 1.5 million people in DC.
Yeah,
alone.
Wow, and they happen all around the world, didn't they?
Yeah.
On every continent, because there were about 40 people in Antarctica who were protesting with penguins. And if that's not the most beautiful thing you've heard today, then I don't know what you're doing with
it's
your
amazing.
Time.
Women's March of the Penguins.
Exactly. That's I tweeted that, I think.
Nice to read all these little stories about, like, I remember seeing one of like this little town in Georgia where it was like 30 people outside in a storm, like... There were so many. Like, it's impossible to know how many people were protesting because there were just so many.
Well, there is actually a really cool, I forget what university he's from, but there's actually a college professor who made a like universally editable Google Doc. And he's like basically like list your city and list how many people were approximately in attendance. And so it's got like all of the different places where people marched. And then it's got like a low end of the estimate and a high end of the estimate, I guess, just because, you know, people, not everybody's like a professional crowd counter.
Yeah.
So they're like, it looked like there were between 20 and 30,000 people. And I think the last time I looked at that, which was on Sunday, they estimated, like, the low end of the spectrum was like 3.5 million people worldwide. The high end of the spectrum was like 5 million.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredibly inspiring seeing all the pictures and the banners and everything.
Yeah, and it's like, whether you support him or not, like, you kind of can't deny that this was like a really huge movement.
Yeah.
For some
it's hard to miss.
At least I think is really positive.
So the one in 1913 was just 5,000 to 8,000 people, but that's still pretty awesome. So they marched down Pennsylvania Avenue. They marched past the White House, and there were just like thousands of people watching. The organizers were Alice Paul and Lacey Burns, and so they got a permit to march, but there were still like fights and stuff. Protesters were attacked by people in the crowd because women should vote. And so a lot of people were injured, but public outrage at the violence translated to wider support for the suffrage movement. These marches this past weekend, though, I haven't heard really anything about violent things happening, which is good.
Yeah, I think there weren't any arrests in D.C., which that's just monumental because of how many people there were. Like, I can't imagine there being a group of 1.5 million people and nobody gets pissed off enough at each other to, like, for at least one person. And I also loved, I saw this thing where it said that they felt like it was one of, like, the most, you know, obviously when you have that many people, there's going to be trash, there's going to be cleanup, but they said they were really surprised by the amount of, like, cleanliness, and they said that, like, wherever there were trash cans that were overflowing, people were trying to put their stuff in as, like, as neat piles right around the trash cans as they could, and I was just like, that's just, like, amazing. That this wonderful, you know, this big march had, like, you know, people who are trying to be conscious of the environment they're marching in, which is nice.
Yeah, so that's pretty much it.
It's a nice tie-in to Serafina, you know.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sticking it to the man.
Maybe she was there.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
I wonder if there was, like, a suffrage movement in, you know, the Wizarding World, or if they were kind of just sitting over there being like, LOL,
yeah,
women are equal, duh. It's a nice thought to have. But, yeah, I mean, the suffrage movement was huge, but I will say this much. It also, like, it's another one of those areas where, like, diversity was, like, not a thing for a really long time. Like, you know, a lot of the women at that time that were protesting were, like, white women who are specifically being like, let's get rights for white women and we'll worry about everybody else later. But
yeah, and I don't know about, like, the organizers of this march, like, how they felt about that. Yeah. Were they racist?
They wouldn't be the only ones of that time period, that's for sure. But it's, yeah, just those kinds of things in history are important to remember, you know. Because especially, like, even now when people are constantly talking about, like, okay, you know, like, oh, women only make 72 cents to the dollar. Well, that's white women make 72 cents to the dollar. Women of color usually make, like, marginally less. And that's just friggin' ridiculous. Get your crap together, world.
Yeah, really.
Exactly. Sold it out.
Shall we open the newt case?
Shall we open the newt case? Okay. Yes.
Hey, I love what's in the newt case today. It's my fave. Go ahead, Sophie.
So it's time to open the newt case. And this week, we decided we're going to look at the unicorn. Because I'm shocked we haven't already.
I cannot believe we have not discussed unicorns. What have we been doing all this time?
Exactly. Where have you been? And also, I thought it was kind of awesome because we've talked about basically powerful women, so this kind of ties in with
women are unicorns.
Yeah, well, more because of, like, yes they are. Let's go with that. Okay,
give your legitimate reason and pretend I didn't say anything.
No, I like that. No, my legitimate reason was really just that, like, the whole thing, well, in the Harry Potter world it's different with different mythology. In the Harry Potter world they prefer the woman's touch. In the scene in Goblet of Fire with Grubbly Punk, she gets all the girls to the front and the boys have to hang back. I was like, yeah, girl power.
That's so excellent.
Yup. Which every time I say that, I just think the Spice Girls, but anyway.
Yeah, well, you know what? The Spice Girls were kind of like my gateway to British culture, because I was really into them like right around the same time I was into Harry Potter. So it's like, yeah, the two just meshed very well together and guaranteed that I was going to be obsessed with British stuff at a young age.
It's a good way to start.
Yep.
British culture. Anyway, the unicorn. So this is the description from the Fantastic Beasts book. So this is specific to the Harry Potter understanding, I guess, of the unicorn. And it says, "The unicorn is a beautiful beast found throughout the forests of Northern Europe. It is a pure white horned horse when fully grown, though the foals are initially golden and turn silver before achieving maturity. The unicorn's horn, blood, and hair all have highly magical properties. It generally avoids human contact, is more likely to allow a witch to approach it than a wizard, and is so fleet of foot that it is very difficult to capture."
Oh, fleet of foot. So, that's such a great way to describe something.
Isn't it? Do you think, I wonder if Newt ever caught one, or if he just saw one in the distance? Yeah.
Well, if there's not a unicorn in that case at some point, I'll be very disappointed. I think they'd be totally remiss to not have unicorns in that universe of the films at some point.
Oh, that would be great. Or especially if they're found in Northern Europe. Maybe when he's in Paris, finds a unicorn.
French unicorns. I'm here for it.
That would be cool. So they're used a lot in the Harry Potter series. Obviously, in Philosopher's Stone, one's slain in the wood, and Voldemort's using the blood to stay alive. And then Hagrid uses the tail hairs for bandages, I think, and the hair's also used in wands, although I can't remember who has a wand with a unicorn hair. Someone does. And then more generally, unicorns were first mentioned by the ancient Greeks, but more in accounts of natural history than in mythology, apparently. And then there have been many accounts of the unicorn throughout mythology, particularly in the medieval and Middle Ages. And there have also been some curious attempts to prove that it exists. For example, I found on Wikipedia an example that a German mayor.
That's definitely a German name.
That's definitely German. I think it's because I just was talking about Paris. There was a German mayor who found some prehistoric bones and reconstructed them and called it a unicorn, but it actually was made of bones from a rhinoceros, a mammoth, and the horn of a narwhal whale. So there's a picture of it, and it just looks bizarre. So
we'll have to tweet this picture out so people can see it.
Yeah. It's quite a way down on this page if you're looking now. But people have tried to prove that it is this. Obviously, that one was not real. And then the unicorn also appears in many coats of arms, including the royal arms of Queen Elizabeth II. So I guess like the dragon, it's kind of a mythological creature that's kind of become part of accepted everyday culture, because the dragon's sort of, is it the symbol of Wales? I'm going to be. whereas the unicorn is the symbol of Scotland, which is nicely where Hogwarts is, so it kind of ties in. And Scotland chose the unicorn because it's a proud and haughty beast which would rather die than be captured, just as Scots would fight to remain sovereign and unconquered.
I love the Scottish. They're just so great.
I know. I was like, that is so great and so Scottish. So yeah, that's a little bit about the unicorn. There's so much about it out there because obviously it's so much a part of culture. It's impossible.
Yeah, we could do a whole podcast about unicorns.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, exactly.
Let's start it.
Yep, right now.
Let's do it.
Fantastic unicorns. And we're a podcast about them. Unicorns are just so spectacular. Have you guys ever read The Last Unicorn or seen the movie?
I know I've seen the movie, but not for a long time.
Oh, it's really great. In keeping with our apparently we're recommending everything this episode. Check out The Last Unicorn. It's a classic.
No, I haven't read that. I've seen that.
Yeah, so it's a very, very cool book. Really classic example of fantasy literature. But yeah, I think that's really awesome that like there's so much like lore on unicorns.
Yeah,
and they're it's totally possible that they could have existed. I mean, come on, like Have you seen the platypus? A horse with a horn is like not that inconceivable, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
It could well have... I mean, where do these things come from? Why do they become a part of sort of mythology? They must be based on something.
Especially because, you know, when you look at like unicorns and you look at dragons, like these are things that like, if you look in history in different corners of the world that had no way of communicating with each other, you have these like depictions of these same creatures. And so it's like, they can't really have been that, you know... It's not like they could tweet at each other, you know, like, it's not like England and, you know, China were talking to each other about each other's dragons in the 1300s, but they both had dragons in their mythology, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It speaks to either magical creatures really did exist, or the human imagination is limited to a very specific set of parameters.
Well, I hope we see some unicorns in the next movie, or another movie.
Yeah, unicorns would be excellent.
That would be. Because he writes about them, so he must encounter them.
Mm-hmm.
So, come on, Newt. Find a unicorn.
Oh my gosh, what do you think he would name a unicorn?
Oh my god. Something,
probably like Bob or something.
Yeah.
Bob the Unicorn. Best friends with Frank the Thunderbird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody go do the fan art.
Great at naming creatures.
Yeah, it's like he uses such like, you know, radically different things. Like Frank is very different from Dougal, which is very different. Yeah. Oh, okay. Someone brought this up recently, and I apologize if it was something that was on another episode. I don't think it was, but somebody made a point of explaining why Pickett's name is Pickett.
Uh-huh.
Because he picks locks.
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I was like, holy crap. I was like, I don't know if that was something you guys, if you guys said that on an episode, I'm sorry to repeat it. But
I don't think so.
I feel like it was something someone either tweeted at us or that I saw on Tumblr. Oh, so I'm really sorry to not be able to credit the original source of that information, but I was so excited when I realized that.
That's just like typical J.K. Rowling.
Like yeah, it's either got some like really deep mythological reasoning or like it just sounded cute.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pun as well.
Yeah,
she likes punny things.
It's very very punny lady. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Bob the Unicorn.
Bob the Unicorn.
Hashtag confirmed.
So that's it for today's episode. Make sure to send us news stories, your fantastic theories, anything that you have to say. And our podcast question this week is, how would you like to see Serafina return in the series, in one of the later movies? So, yeah, send your answers on social media or on our website, and we might read them on the next show. And thank you, Elena and Sophie, for joining me today on this little episode.
It's been a delight.
Pleasure. It's been great. Yeah.
And speaking of our website, so as Shannon was saying, you can definitely make sure to explore more about previous episodes or leave us comments for the OWL post. And we also have a contact form on our website. If you go to speakbeastie.com/contact, you can send us your messages, your questions, your theories, all of that stuff. So all of that and more stuff is at speakbeastie.com. Our Newt case section is going to be opening up very soon, so we'll be sure to share with you guys when that is officially live. But you can also, in the meantime, find us on Twitter and Instagram at speakbeastie, Facebook at facebook.com/speakbeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can find us on Patreon at patreon.com/speakbeastie, where you can subscribe to us for like monthly amounts, and you can join our common room, get bonuses and bloopers and other various shenanigans. The listeners that subscribed to us before our Dan Fogler episode actually got a sneak peek, so they actually knew about it before everybody else did, which was kind of fun. So yeah, check us out on Patreon and everything at speakbeastie.com.
I'm Shannon.
I'm Sophie.
And I'm Elena.
Case closed.